Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful day today.
It is. It is really nice outside. Let's take the radio stuff outside. Let's broadcast from outside today. Come on, field trip.
I mean, while I would be totally fine with that, I don't feel like moving all this gear. I don't know about you.
Nah, I'm kind of lazy too.
Yeah, let's not. No, though, great day. Certainly a great weekend for the Detroit area, unless you're the Tigers, who are end up losing to the Royals by, like, I believe it was at last check, like 20-0.
Oh,
something
my gosh.
Like that. Something ridiculous like that. It was not great. But there is at least good stuff going on in Detroit sports this weekend.
Yeah.
The NFL draft started last night, and the Lions, who we were expecting to draft at number 29, they did not end up drafting at 29.
They moved up.
They traded up and didn't have to give up a king's ransom to get there either. It was an odd draft for a multitude of reasons, which we'll get into in probably excruciating detail later. But the Lions, I honestly didn't think were going to make a move up, especially by the time that we got to like the 20s or so. Like, okay, they're sticking where they are, and especially now that the draft odds have kind of gone their way, like a lot of offensive players taken. The first 14 picks were all offensive in some way, shape, or form. Six QBs taken. Quite frankly, I don't think half of them are going to end up panning out in the NFL. But again, we'll get to that later. You didn't have the first defensive player taken until pick number 15, which left you feeling pretty good about the Lions being able to land their man, whoever that might be. And it really looked like, all right, we're gonna end up landing like the best defensive player in the draft. Like, I was holding out hope at this point that like we'd get far enough down that like Jared Verse would fall to us, which I didn't even think would be a remote possibility. But it really, for a while, I'm like, well, could this actually happen? And then he ends up getting taken by the Rams, who decide finally to not to actually use a first-round pick, which they haven't done in approximately forever. Like, they usually just trade right out. They're not much for drafting early on, as we've seen over the years with that team.
Yep.
So they end up taking him off the board. Like, oh, well, it was nice while it lasted. What are you going to do? So even then, I'm like, okay, well, we're still in play for a top-flight cornerback, which I was originally thinking, okay, we're going to be lucky if, you know, to get Kool-Aid McKinstry as our guy at this point, not thinking that, you know, Cooper DeJean might be in play, or even the guy we ended up getting, Tyrion Arnold. But Quinyon Mitchell's still on the board at that point. He ends up getting taken, I think, right before the Lions end up picking. And
two picks before.
I think that might be part of what spurred them to make that move. All right, he's off the board. That means Arnold's probably going next or close to it. We got to move up now. And they did. They get their guy, a cornerback out of Bama. And you could make an argument that he is the best corner in this draft. You can't say the Lions didn't go out and take the best player available, because when they did end up drafting, he absolutely was the best player still on the board. I can't be a whole lot happier with what the Lions ended up doing. And you only had to give up your third-round pick, which was at 73 overall, to get him. So even that's not bad, to move up five spots when you saw what some of those other pick swaps were taken back in, like what other teams had to give up to move up like a spot or two, like the Minnesota thing, which we'll talk about that probably in the next segment. But that Brad Holmes managed to get it done, move up significantly, only had to give up one pick to do it, and got his man, and got the thing that I wanted the most. Like, we've talked about this quite a bit over the last few weeks. Like, the biggest priority in this draft, I mean, until Cam Sutton went, you know, have you seen me on milk cartons? Like, until that point, there really wasn't a huge, like, need that absolutely, like, had to be addressed, like, immediately. There wasn't just that one thing, like, you were in dire need of. Like, you could kind of afford to just go best player available and be fine with that. And you basically ended up filling the one major need you have and getting the best player available. So all in all, I'd say it's a win for Detroit. Like, I give that a solid A.
Oh, yeah.
The only downside is now you're only picking once today. You're picking in the second round. You're not picking at all in the third round unless Brad Holmes swings some sort of magic and ends up making that happen. So this guy, Tyrion Arnold.
Bama.
Yep.
Crimson Tide.
And he is quite, I mean, he's damn good at what he does. He is arguably the top corner in this draft class. You could make the argument for Quinion Mitchell, who ended up falling quite a bit further, I noticed, than he was projected to go in a lot of circles.
Yeah.
Like, all the defensive players really kind of did. I mean, he's very versatile player, for one. He's played wide corner. He's played over the slot. He's a great run defender. A Pro Football Focus graded him out at a 90.5. That's elite stuff.
That's nice.
That was third among all FBS corners. He had 10 defensive stops against the run, which was also top 20. He had 13 pass breakups last season, so fifth most at the position, and his 5 interceptions were tied for third. Like, he's a ball hawk, and he can, you know, defend against the run very well. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better pick there. And I think Lions fans are pretty thrilled about it all the way around. There wasn't a whole lot that I think Brad Holmes could have done that we wouldn't have been happy with, but this, having this guy fall into your lap, well, fall, I guess, 5 picks above where your lap would have been,
not a fall, that's a trip.
it kind of is. But he was expected to go, like, middle first round, so the fact that he was even still there at all, and you managed to nab him, great job by the Lions, great job by Brad Holmes. Now, looking at today, the guys who were still available, you might be able to go and get one of the other guys that seemingly on kind of a lot of people's list, like as far as like the top defensive guys in this draft, Johnny Newton out of Illinois. He was last year's Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. He had 7.5 sacks and 8.5 tackles for loss last year with Illinois, which, I mean, it's impressive because Illinois is like not good. But he is kind of undersized, and there's a few medical concerns that are probably what ultimately led to him slipping out of the first round entirely. He did suffer a partial Jones fracture near his pinky toe in the second half of last year, which ended up costing him a good chunk of the pre-draft workouts and things. But he's still a guy who's widely expected to be pretty good. As to where he ends up falling, like, certainly he could be in play for the Lions by the time they pick at 61 overall. You could see, potentially, the guy who ends up replacing Frank Ragnow, Jackson Powers Johnson, because the rumor, the thing that keeps going around right now with Ragnow is that he might call it a career after this season. It's widely expected that might be the case.
He hasn't been here that long.
He hasn't, but he's had some, you know, injuries that have torn him up good. So, like, it is weird, because, like, he hasn't been in the league that long. He's only 27, but about to be 28.
I mean, a center is a tough gig.
I mean, offensive line, you know, in his position
for
particularly,
the Lions,
you're right.
Offensive line for the Lions, that's a big one.
I mean, that is true. But here might be a guy who could potentially play, basically be the guy in the next in line to be his replacement ultimately. Now, there were a few medical issues with him, too. He had groin injuries and hip injuries last year, though it was actually the only year that he started all of his team's games. But he can play both guard and center at a very high level, so you could very well see him end up here. He could end up being a starter here at guard and then moving to center once Ragnow decides to hang it up. So that's a guy who might be in play for you as well. Or if you're looking for an edge rusher, which I keep saying that would be rather nice to have, Marshawn Neyland, a local boy out of Western Michigan.
Broncos.
A Grand Rapids boy at that. So he stayed in state to play there, and he is a very physical guy on the edge. He's quite good at setting the edge in the run defense for sure. You wonder if the Lions are going to want to go that route or if they're going to try and see what they've got in Josh Pascal for Preschal. So they may not go that route, but I'd like to see someone a little more I'd like to see someone opposite of Hutch that could really shore up the defense there. Whether or not you go after a wide receiver, that could be something that's in play. Obviously, you'd like to fill the position that Josh Reynolds just
vacated.
Keon Coleman could potentially be in play there. A.D. Mitchell, possibly. Although I don't tend to think that he's going to end up falling far enough for the Lions to draft him. Like, I'm actually surprised that he didn't go in the first round. So I don't necessarily think those are guys that are going to be available by the time the Lions, I mean, unless they move up again, which, I mean, stranger things have happened. But there's a lot of ways you could go, and honestly, I wouldn't be upset at any of those. Like, you're at a point with this team right now where you can just be, let's take the best guy on the board regardless of position, because you no longer really have those major glaring needs. The one was corner, and you got that on day one. So it'll be interesting to see what direction the Lions go in tonight, if they pick anything tonight, if they add picks tonight, who knows. A lot of stuff to get to, and we'll talk a little more draft coming up. Stick around, it is happy hour, back right after this. So there were some kind of interesting things that didn't have anything to do with the Lions, at least not directly, that happened in the first round of last night's draft. And there's a couple in particular that I really want to make fun of.
Sure.
So when we started talking earlier about what the cost was to move up for the Lions last night,
yeah,
they only had to give up their third-round pick to move up five spots. Meanwhile, you have Minnesota move up one spot, and guess how much they had to give up to make that happen?
Minnesota's desperate.
They are desperate.
They're freaking out. I don't know how much they get.
Just how desperate, you ask? A fourth and a fifth rounder.
Wow.
To move up one spot to ultimately take J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan. And I'm sorry, Michigan fans, I'm not sold on this idea. I'm not that worried that, oh, he's going to be in the NFC North now. Like, what am I really supposed to be scared of here? Like, we don't really, he's still kind of admittedly an unproven because he spent so much time behind, you know, on a team with an elite running game that he hasn't had to do all that much. Do you want to know how many times that man threw more than 25 times in a game all last season? Five.
Five.
You know how many times Jared Goff threw less than 25 times in a game last season? Zero. Like, you're not going to be able to get away with that. You're not going to have a run the ball down your throat kind of thing, 3 yards in a cloud of dust like Michigan does. You're actually going to be counted on to make a large number of passes. Like, these games where you're only throwing for like 150 or less yards all the time, like, that's not how the NFL works, man. Like, you're going to have to really show something against, you know, in this league, you're going to have to really prove yourself a lot more than you've had to at Michigan. I mean, can't take anything away from the fact they won a natty, but that wasn't all him that got you there. Or even really a majority of what got you there.
No, but I don't like the idea that I was rooting for McCarthy, and now this season, I can't. In fact, he's in the same division.
I love that for all of you. I really do. Like, now he gets to go to the division rival, and now I can feel even less bad in rooting for him to fail. I love it. I absolutely love it. Because quite frankly, it means the Vikings are going to continue to not be relevant in this division. I am good with that. But what was hilarious last night? Oh, the Atlanta Falcons. So they just acquired former Minnesota QB Kirk Cousins.
Yes, they did.
And this offseason. And they'd given him $100 million in guaranteed money. They had the eighth overall pick last night. So you assume, okay, maybe they're going to go get some defense. Maybe they'll go and get like a Dallas Turner. Maybe they'll go get Laiatu Latu. Maybe they'll go out and do something to shore that up because there's a lot of issues on that side of the ball. What do they do instead? They draft a quarterback. And not just any quarterback. They draft like a 30-year-old quarterback, a Michael Penix Jr., who I believe has been playing in college now for like 8 years.
Van Wilder.
Pretty much the Van Wilder of college football. And that's what they go and do. A guy that, well, he's already getting into like what would be his prime years. Like he's already, like legitimately, he's already 24. Like, and you just signed a guy to a deal with $100 million of guaranteed money, so it's not like you're moving on from him already. What were the Falcons thinking? I can't explain this.
They were panicking. They're another team that they feel like they should be farther than they are. They wrote a blank check to Cousins, and they're probably as soon as
that, they're already drafting his replacement.
Yeah, yeah. Who's gonna be as soon like, as the ink dried on that check, they're like, are we really know what we were doing yet?
Like now you've drafted a guy who's probably legitimately not gonna start for them until he's like 30, because Cousins is gonna be around for a while, and Penix ain't getting any younger. Like he legitimately played 6 years in college. Like. You don't. I don't get that. Him and Bo Nix both. Although Nix is at least going to get to start pretty early because he's going to the. He ended up going to the Broncos, but that was just such a head scratcher to me. Like they apparently had to call him and break the news to Kirk Cousins before they made that pick, and he's like he just doesn't understand. And to be fair, none of us understand why they did what they did.
Yeah. So, Kirk, yeah, you're going to read some crazy things about what happened to the draft, and let's just you know it's all true.
Every bit of it's actually true.
A lot of QBs going in the first round. I can't remember the last time I've seen so many QBs in the first round. The first three picks were quarterbacks.
Which that part of it is not as surprising, but the fact that you had six QBs go in the first round. In fact, six QBs end up going in the what they end up taking.
I tuned in right when Drake May was drafted by the Pats, and there were Patriot fans just loving it. Oh, almost come up to crying. Oh, I'm so glad we've got him. This is fantastic.
<It's> hilarious.
Oh, it's Tom Brady 2.0. Yeah, right. You keep telling yourself that.
Whatever helps you guys sleep at night. So, in the top 12, the first 12 picks, half of them were QBs. That's a rare thing. And the fact that there was so much there's so much offense going so early in this, like I said, you didn't have the first defensive player go until pick 15, which was the best thing that could have happened for the Lions, because that's most of your needs are on the offensive side of the ball. Like, you can get an offensive lineman later in the draft. Like, that's not going to be hard to get. But once there starts to be a run on corners and defensive guys, like, they were going to go quick, and which is kind of, I think, why they made the move they did. I wouldn't call it a panic move, per se, but Brad Holmes kind of saw the writing on the wall, like, all right, these guys are starting to go. And as it turns out, you could make the argument that maybe they didn't need to do that, but Tyrion Arnold might have been off the board had they stayed where they were. Because no other corners went between where the Lions drafted and where they started at. The next corner ended up actually going at 30. Nate Wiggins ended up going to Clemson. So there's a chance you could have still got your guy, and Dallas also went, they went offensive lineman. So he might have still been there, but they, I don't think, expected him to fall as far as he did in the first place. Like, once he fell out of the team, it's like, you know what, maybe we should move up while we still have the ability to do so.
Yep.
But back to the winners and losers and the just head-scratchers of last night. I found it kind of interesting that the Buffalo, they didn't end up doing a whole lot to address the fact that Josh Allen doesn't have any wide receivers currently. But it, and that was like the big point of need for them. I mean, you ship Stephon Diggs out of town. You need to fill that spot. And they don't really have a number one guy in the roster right now. And they ended up trading back twice. First with the Chiefs, who ended up taking a wideout, Xavier Worthy, out of Texas, and then again with Carolina, who also took a wide receiver.
Do you ever wonder, like, if current NFL players are watching their draft, scratching their head as what their team's doing? Like, Jake Allen watching, why are you drafting him?
Like, why aren't you, Josh yells, like, why aren't you drafting at all?
Yeah.
And granted, and I did sort of allude to it in the last segment. I mean, it's not like there's not guys they could go after. I mean, next round, I mean, like I said, A.D. Mitchell's still on the board. Keon Coleman's still on the board. So, like, there's definitely opportunity, and this has been said to be a very deep class when it comes to wideouts. So I can understand hanging back a bit because Mitchell was expected to be taken. Actually, was expected to be drafted by Buffalo at 28.
Yeah.
And then wasn't. So maybe they still managed to get their guy anyway, and all of this is for naught. But you got to be kind of sitting there wondering if you're Josh Allen, like, hey, can I get a little bit of help here? Something. Anything.
His wife or girlfriend is like, it's okay. You'll do fine this season.
Now, the other thing, real quick, before we got to go to news, Antonio Pierce over at the Raiders, like, he's in day two of the draft, and he doesn't have any idea who's going to be starting at QB for him yet. I mean, there was talk that they might trade up to take Jaden Daniels, which obviously didn't end up happening. There was talk that they might land Michael Penix or Bo Nix, but ultimately, those things did not happen. And you gotta imagine they're not going with Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew, old Uncle Rico, next season. There's no way. I mean, you basically have a career backup and a guy that hasn't really shown in his, well, first year that he necessarily deserves to be a starter. I mean, they did at 13, you know, they made a very sound pick. Brock Bowers is gonna be great in this league, but it is odd that we're day two in and pretty much every QB that matters is off the board. And that they didn't end up going after anybody. I thought that to be just a little bit odd. It's Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour. And let's go ahead and take a pause from draft talk for a little bit and dive back into our favorite thing we do all week, Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice, where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and quite frankly, we give better advice than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
Yay.
Sure, we may ruin a few lives along the way, but, you know, that's showbiz, baby. Joining us also, by the way, Lapeer Main Street Manager, and I believe the number 5 overall pick in last night's NFL draft, Lapeer Main Street Manager, Jim Ault.
That's right. Always happy to give my unsolicited opinion.
So is this kind of any relation, this Joe Ault, I guess? Like, I just assume all Alts are related because it's such a, uncommon name.
Yeah, that's my third cousin. Yep. You met him at the last Memorial Day party, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be.
He was the guy in the corner. He's like, I'm going to go in the draft. Yeah, don't even look at him.
Yeah, sure you are.
Yeah, you bet, Joe.
Don't really acknowledge him.
Here's some coloring books, Joe.
That's what I majored in college.
As it turns out, he showed all of us, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, either way, let's dive into this, shall we? Dear literally anybody other than Sean, Adam, or Jim, I need advice on how to reconnect with my formerly estranged daughter. The two of us fell out badly in 2016 when I could no longer bear watching her disastrous life choices play out, and she could no longer stand hearing my views on those choices. I made a lot of bad choices myself when I was younger, resulting in me being a single mom with 2 jobs in debt, and it was awful watching her throw away opportunities I'd worked like a dog to get for her. For example, she turned down a scholarship to study computer science to pursue an expensive digital art qualification instead, then racked up debt moving away instead of staying home to study, work, and save. Our biggest fallout came when she announced her engagement to Nick, a man with no job prospects and no ambition, who expressed that he would be content being a house husband and stay-at-home dad while my daughter essentially fully supported him. How do I get onto that plan? When my daughter told me she was marrying this man with no degree but plenty of debt, I flat out told her I would not pay for the wedding and did not approve. She screamed at me and we didn't talk again until this year when she made contact over email to tell me she was pregnant and asked about reconnecting. I was excited about the idea and cautiously happy about her pregnancy news since it seemed planned and she wasn't in the dire financial straits I'd feared. When we met, however, things didn't go well. I was shocked when I saw her. She'd put on weight, far more than pregnancy weight at this stage, got a bizarre and unflattering haircut that I cannot believe her job allows, and was covered in tattoos. I I said something about her looking very different. She immediately snapped at me and said that if I had nothing nice to say, I shouldn't say anything at all. I said I didn't appreciate her speaking to me as if I was a child. She stood up and left the cafe without touching her drink barely 2 minutes after we sat down. Now I'm left wondering if it's worth taking another shot at reconnecting at all, since apparently she will disappear at a hair trigger of tension. I want to send her an email asking what happened, but I have no idea what to say. I suspect she'll want a groveling apology. She has demanded those in the past, which I have no intention of writing, but I do wish to speak with her and obviously meet my grandchild at some point. Do I owe her an apology for the surprise reaction to her appearance? If I send an email, how do I strike the balance of a placating tone, reaching out, and not over-apologizing for something extremely minor? I miss her badly despite our difficulties.
Yes. You... Jim, you want to take this one?
Yeah.
You I'm going to be the batter's apology, box swinging.
Yeah, right? So I would say, yeah, you owe her an apology. She was concerned that she wouldn't be able to support herself on her digital art degree, but she's able to support her husband, allow him to live at home, support a child, apparently eat quite well,
yeah,
plus afford to get tattoos. Sounds like she's doing pretty darn good. So, yeah, maybe you do owe your daughter an apology because it sounds like she's living life and you're just being there being jealous. That's what I'm seeing.
She's not living the life that she planned for her daughter. She
nope, she's
had,
enjoying it.
She had everything. I got you a scholarship to do this. I did this, and you did nothing. I'm trying to vicariously live through you, and if you keep doing things your own way, how can I do that? And now you're pregnant. I don't like the way your body looks. I don't like the way your hair looks. When this letter started, she's like, I don't talk to my daughter because of her life choices. I'm immediately thinking, heroin. Like, this daughter's on heroin. She's got to take a bad route. She's in, there's crime, there's jail, addiction, and everything else. Because I've had some family members way down the road where, yeah, they kind of had to write off a daughter because it's, you know, of heroin addiction and, you know, stealing from the family and everything else. This person, it sounds like the daughter's got it all figured out.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't bray up with what she wanted. She's being kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably better off just not even trying to have a relationship with your kid because you apparently just are not capable of not being a terrible person. Like, the first thing is to, you're saying, I just had a mildly surprised reaction. You probably sat down like, ooh, you put a little weight on there, didn't you? Like, you just look like a bunch of trailer trash, don't you?
Wow, is that Ozzy Osbourne? I had no idea. Wow.
You probably made some sort of snide comment that you're not wanting to admit to here,
yeah,
and that's why she stormed out and why she probably doesn't want anything to do with you, because you just can't help yourself but to be just supremely judgmental at all times.
I mean, I'm willing to bet there were layers, not just like one snide comment,
oh,
but there was probably comments on the tattoos, comments on the weight, comments on like everything she iterated in that letter. She was probably telling her daughter, but not as nicely as she put it in the letter.
Oh, it was probably just an avalanche of criticism. I mean, she's like, we were there like 2 minutes, and she didn't even touch her drink. No, well, that means you had the chance to order a drink, have it delivered. The entire time you were probably critiquing this poor woman, and she gave you a chance. She's like, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. You know, here is your warning shot, mama.
And she immediately comes back with, I'm not going to be talked to like that. Well, then I guess you're not going to have me in your life. See you later.
We'll see you later.
And the idea that, like, maybe acknowledging that maybe she's been a little bit over the top. You're like, I'm not groveling to my kid. Like, she should come back to me on my terms. Like, your terms have already gotten you cut off from her as it is. Like, maybe you ought to try a different tactic here.
Yeah. And typically, if you have to ask the question of, do I owe them an apology? The answer is yes. And you already know that.
She knows it. She just doesn't want to actually, she doesn't want to.
I don't know. I think she is really living in a tent of ignorance, because she thinks that she's the victim. She thinks that, well, I'm just trying to be a good mother and I'm trying to make decisions for my my daughter. No, you're trying to rule her life, and you're coming across as a real battle axe, quite frankly.
A little bit. Like, I'm not surprised, quite frankly. Like, everything about this, like, it's not even the, well, do I owe her an apology? It's like the whole, like, oh, she's just too sensitive. Like, not that I've been a terrible person and made a bunch of comments about her life choices that were not wanted nor asked for.
Right.
It's, oh, my kid's too sensitive for, you know, for me to not make snide remarks about her life all the time. Yeah, maybe here's what I would probably do if I were you. Like, I wouldn't. Don't bother reaching out. Just stay far away from her and your grandkid forever. Because anything you're going to do is just going to make it worse.
They're better off without you.
They are. They're absolutely better off without you because you don't seem to have any ability to actually be self-aware and realize that, oh, maybe my actions and the words I say are hurting the people I claim to love.
Right.
Crazy.
I know.
Who saw that coming?
Because it's not like the criticism is going to stop when she has this baby.
It's only going to get worse.
You're feeding them that kind of food. You're doing that. No, that's not how you bathe the baby.
She's going to question every single parenting choice that this woman makes. And
usually encourage families to always try to work things out, and I would do that in this situation also. I would say, yeah, go ahead and reach out, but also understand that ultimately it is up to the daughter to decide if she now wants the mom in her life and if she wants the mom in the baby's life. And if she's going to continue to try to control her daughter's life, then don't be surprised when your daughter once again removes you from the situation.
Oh, the mom has to put herself in check real quick.
Or else there's going to be, like, zero chance at a relationship at all. Well, I think we've about beaten that one to the ground. Shall we move on?
Yes, please. This one's infuriating me.
Likewise. Dear somebody who cares, I have two adult daughters and a 14-year-old stepdaughter. When we married 2 years ago, my wife and I agreed to keep our parenting and finances separate beyond the common household funds. At the time, my wife was making more money than me. Well, my mother recently died and left me her beachside condo. I plan to sell it and split the money between my two daughters and myself. They live in very expensive areas, and their rent is twice the mortgage on our home, so they could use the help. At the same time, my wife found out that the college fund her parents promised for her daughter was just a lie. No money is set aside beyond a few grand she has saved from her child support. She's now adamant the money should go to her daughter equally as my girls. I understand her being upset at the failure of her parents to keep their promise or that her ex is a louse, but she keeps hitting below the belt. I obviously don't love her daughter or want her to have the best future. I do, but I've repeatedly been told to stay in my lane when it comes to her. She's a brilliant girl, but hates going out of her comfort zone. She got into a gifted program at the Magnet High School, but didn't want to leave her friends, so she's going to the local one. There are summer dual credit classes, but she'd rather just hang out with her friends. She could be going into college as a junior if she took advantage. She doesn't want to. My wife won't push the issue, and I don't get to have an opinion on the matter. What do I do here?
Well, I mean, it sounded like they had a great situation do a separate parenting, which I've never ever heard of that going well, but
no.
So the wife and the daughter, his stepdaughter, they found out that, you know, things weren't as rosy as they once thought. At that point, I was like, you know what? He did marry into a family, with a woman with a kid. And we've talked about this many times. I mean, you kind of have to accept the fact that there's a kid. And maybe they should have cut the kid in a little bit more because, I mean, yeah, the wife has always been stay in your own lane kind of thing, but we're not talking about her. We're talking about the kid. But because the kid, the stepdaughter, has shown many moments of not giving a you-know-what, then that'd probably be a waste of money, quite frankly. Maybe sock it, if you decide to divide it and cut her in, put into like a trust or something like that, but I think getting her to leave her friends, which apparently is a big problem for her, I think it'd just be a waste of money.
There could be ways to put stipulations on it, like you have to achieve X, Y, and Z before you have access to the funds. Like you said, you married into that family, and that includes the stepdaughter.
Yep.
And at that point, that also includes the responsibility of becoming that child's parent.
Yes.
As well. So I understand that, like, the wife's perspective of, like, you know, you should be including her too.
Mm-hmm.
And kids are also pretty perceptive. And maybe part of the reason the stepdaughter isn't as ambitious as he would like is because she's like, yeah, my stepdad doesn't care and doesn't care about me as much as the other daughters. So why should I even try? Because he doesn't think I'm good enough. So clearly I'm not good enough. So I don't know. I mean, it could just be a communication issue and a parenting issue. That being said, I don't have kids, so I'm probably really bad to chime in on this. If we were talking about dogs, different story. They would definitely get the money, but, you know.
Okay, well, Jim.
You split the money with the dog?
Let's say you married somebody who has a young puppy, and you already have two dogs of your own. Yeah. Now, the puppy was originally going to go to a nice obedience school, but that didn't pan out, and now you have money to send take care of your two dogs.
I would include the third puppy. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. See, I mean, it was everything was copacetic until they found out that the phantom, the imaginary college fund was not there, and now all of a sudden the wife wants to renegotiate. It was stay in your own lane. I can parent this. We're separated. We're separating our parenting skills and everything else. Then all of a sudden, that didn't happen. Now all of a sudden, it's she is telling him, the writer, well, you owe me. You owe this. It's like, well.
And it could be perception, too. So like the wife this whole time. So there's a side story here that the wife's parents were telling her all this time that there's a college fund. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden, there's not a college fund.
Right.
So I kind of want to know what's going on there. But also.
Gambling debts.
Yeah, right. But also, so the wife is moving along with life, assuming that there is a college fund for her daughter.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, it's like, my daughter's nearing that age where she could be getting ready for college, and there is no money there.
Right.
So, yeah, I understand why she kind of wants to shift gears and be like, hey, this wasn't a situation we were planning on, but it's the reality that we don't have money for this kid. So maybe we should look at utilizing some of this beach condo money for all of them.
That's what I think that would be the route to go. But what really kind of tickles me is that I think the letter said something about she was making more than me, and then this happened. So it was almost like kind of she was making more money. She had it all figured out. She was the breadwinner or whatever. So she probably lorded that over him and the two daughters. And now all of a sudden, things have changed. And now all of a sudden, it's not, oh, we're not going to be separate anymore. We're going to be together because I can't afford to send my daughter to a good school, which she doesn't even want to go to.
Now I can talk now.
Oh, sorry.
I think we already know where I'm going with this. Exactly what I'm going to say. Adam could probably call it right now. The exact advice I'm going to tell.
Divorce her.
Yes.
Put both two daughters up for adoption. Take all that money and go to Vegas.
So I honestly think you need to reevaluate the relationship here. For one, this, oh, we're keeping our finances separate. Oh, until you can't touch any of my money, have any of that for anything. Oh, you've got a large sum of money coming to you. Well, now I want a piece of that. I want to change the whole terms of the relationship. That already is a sign in itself that I don't like. The fact that, oh, it's okay to keep the finances separate until you have money. Like, what's my money is my money, and what's your money is now also my money. I don't like that.
Right.
I don't like the fact that she's like, you don't love me, you don't love my kids, because you won't renegotiate the terms here. Like, I don't like that kind of guilt trip either, that you don't love. And I also really don't like, you need to give her money, but you're not allowed to have any say-so in the parenting.
Right.
All three of those are ginormous red flags for me.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I'm definitely considering ending the relationship before she tries to take that inheritance from you. Now, more, I guess, realistically, yeah, you probably should. If you really, I guess, do want to save the peace in this relationship, you probably should cut her in. But under the terms that, all right, if I give her this money, I get to have some sort of say in the parenting of the kid living in our home. Okay?
Yeah, you gotta have the stipulation.
That has to be a stipulation.
That should have been already in there, but yeah, I mean.
Like that, right, exactly.
That should have been before there was any money involved.
Yeah, there shouldn't have need to be money getting exchanged here for that to be the case.
Right, like, I shouldn't have to buy parental rights.
Exactly, and that's kind of what's happening here, but I think that has to be the terms. That has to be a part of any potential. Like, because if I'm not just going to hand you over money, like, I got to have some sort of, you know, that this isn't just going to get blown on whatever. that good choices are going to be made here.
Yeah.
So So, devil's advocate, what if she wanted separate funds because he and his side of the family isn't responsible with their money? He had mentioned his daughters were living in a very high-end area that they can barely afford. You know, maybe they need to reevaluate their lifestyle a little bit. Like, if you can't really afford to make rent as it is, maybe you should scale back a little bit.
That could be.
That's fair,
too.
But
so, I don't know. I'm just throwing out devil's
advocate. No, that's a good point, though.
They're adults that make their own choices. We're talking a minor child here.
Yeah. So, yep. I think you cut her in, the daughter, and you make good with the wife. But then you kind of, I mean, you use it to your advantage. Oh, you want to watch The Bachelorette? Well, I want to watch the Lions game, and since I just gave your daughter a bunch of money, I guess we're watching the Lions.
I don't like that. That's just that's going back and being.
Oh, my shoulders ache, honey. How much money did I give your daughter?
Right, but I mean, that's
you got a headache? No.
Yeah, but I mean, that's being manipulative back the opposite way. And while I love being petty as much as the next guy, it's not a good basis for a relationship.
Right.
We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. So we do have, like, current playoff-like things to talk about.
Yeah.
And also the Red Wings season grades. So as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Yes! Double game three is going on tonight. Rangers and Capitals. And it would appear that the Rangers have been taking care of the Capitals with no problem.
Did we call that series a sweep? At least, no, I did call that a sweep.
I think I had Rangers in six.
You had in five.
Five? Okay.
And then you had Ovechkin scoring goals in three of those five.
Yep. I mean, I don't know if he's on the score sheet yet, but right now the Capitals are down 2-0 against the Blue Shirts. They dropped that puck at 7. And then
I'm still fully expecting that one to be a sweep, not going to lie to you.
Here is the one that really kind of threw off people's brackets was Predators and Canucks. I mean, Vegas is already calling for Predators to win Game 3, and that is not good if you're the Canucks fans. I mean, Demko is out. You have to rely on Casey DeSmith.
Yeah, that was really, I think, ultimately what's going to turn the tide of that whole series, because we've seen plenty of playoff heroics from Thatcher Demko. Without him, they are not in a great position.
10 o'clock, you got Jets and Avalanche. Jets, we're not going quiet into the night like we all thought. At least I thought they were going to.
I had them pushing 7.
Well, you might get your wish because they are tied at a game apiece. They dropped the puck at 10 o'clock. 10:30.
Oh, by the way, you asked about Washington. No, Ovi has not scored a goal yet in this series.
Well, he's got to get it. He's got to get it going.
If they're going to have any chance, he and Strom have to get it going and quick. That was this has been a very high-scoring series thus far with the Jets and the Avs. First game was a 7-6, like, just shootout game.
The entire playoffs have just been, like, defense has not been on the menu. I mean,
nor goaltending, apparently, which is crazy because, I mean, Winnipeg has one of the best goalies in the league in Connor Hellebuck, and he's just absolutely been a sieve through a lot of this. Like, he had 4 goals in the second period on the other night alone.
Yep.
On what was it, Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean,
that's not like him to give up, to be that rattled that quick.
No, absolutely not. I mean, and then you've got the Bolts losing to Panthers 5-3 last night. That series is now 3-0 in favor of Florida Panthers. Are we seeing the end of the dynasty of the Tampa Bay Lightning?
I think we might be. I did not expect that to happen as suddenly as it did.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it certainly looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Florida's a tough team. Florida's a tough physical team.
They're tough physical, and they can score pretty. I mean, they've only put up, they only put up 3 goals in each of the first 2 games, and Game 2 went to OT. 5 goals last night.
Yep.
Even Vasilevsky, who has been, by and large, one of the best in the league, for a long time now. He's just not getting done. Meanwhile, across the other side over there, Sergei Bobrovsky has had some just impressive saves.
Oh, if like he keeps this up, if he keeps up this up, he's Conn Smythe.
Has easily. To be. I mean, it's like the second coming of Dominic Hasek with this fella.
In his prime. Yes. I mean, the thing with Florida is, and I'm saying this with much disdain and hatred towards the Florida Panthers. Don't make it sound like I'm like really this is not a Florida love fest here. But
no, not
they
at
can
all.
Score, but when they had the lead, they know how to clamp down.
They do. Like they play a pretty solid defense too. Like that certainly helps, which Montour's up for a deal at the end of this season. If they're smart, they gotta lock him in.
I think they are. They're gonna get that love contract. You know, like the one that Johan Franzen got when the Wings won the Stanley Cup in 2008. Because as it is right now, I don't see any team on the docket here that can beat the Florida Panthers. I think the Panthers are probably. I don't think in my brackets I've got them winning the cup. But seeing what I've seen from Bobrovsky and company, I think it's going to be the Cats.
Oh, it's absolutely going to be. Like, they might very well, and you called it, like, you had Florida sweeping this series. Yeah. That is still in play right now.
Yeah.
And I think the only team right now in this field that could take them in the East is New York. And I'm not sure anyone on the Western side can take them.
No.
Like, this feels like just a team of destiny right now to me.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Dallas, if they're able to get their you-know-what together.
And there's no guarantee on that.
No.
Like, they might not take this series. Like, Vegas right now, like we had this one going seven games regardless.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will still absolutely stand by that. The next game in that series comes up on Saturday, and right now Vegas is up 2-0. Dallas isn't going away without a fight. That's not how that team's built.
No.
They're going to come back. They're going to win at least a couple. It might not go the distance necessarily, but I think it absolutely still goes to at least six ultimately.
Oh, absolutely.
But Vegas could very well walk away with it. I don't really see anyone right now. I think for sure the Stanley Cup winner this year is coming out of the Eastern Conference.
Well, if that's the case, I think it's definitely the Panthers, because who else? I mean,
right the Rangers now, are the only other team I can think.
Oh, yeah, maybe the Rangers. But I mean,
those are my two. Like, that's probably your Eastern.
That's your conference finals right there. It's going to be Florida and New York.
Yeah, whenever these two teams match up, I don't know if it's going to be in the conference finals or not, but when they match up, it might as well be the conference finals, because that's going to decide which team's playing the Stanley
Cup. Oh, yeah, I
guess
I'm not looking at the bracket correctly, but
I don't even know. Yes,
I would have to look.
But I don't think it matters. Like, you could be getting the Eastern Conference Finals matchup in the next round.
I hope so. I want to see Florida and New York. I mean, those are the two best teams, because you got the bunch of jerks. Carolina looking to close out their series with the Islanders tomorrow.
We did not. Neither one of us saw that coming. We both had that. Well, we both had Carolina winning, but I don't think either one of us thought it would come as quickly as it looks like it's going to.
I didn't either.
You had a six-game series. I had five.
Yep. And, well, I mean,
it could still happen.
It could still happen, but right now it just seems like Carolina is steamrolling the Isles. So I don't.
Patty Waugh's got no answers for that team.
No. No, he doesn't. But, I mean, he got the gig halfway through, so if Lamoriello is smart, he's going to keep Patrick Waugh.
It's Lou Lamoriello.
Lou Lamoriello. Yeah, no. I mean, he's got a ring or two.
He
like
does,
that.
But that seems like just ancient history at this point, man.
It really is.
It's been so long.
When was the last time you won a cup, Lamoriello? Well, the year started with 19. Okay. Yeah, we've got your number, pal.
It's been a minute.
But hey, as long as the players don't have playoff beards, right?
Right?
Yeah.
As long as everyone's wearing, the numbers that he deems appropriate.
Yeah, that's the real problem, huh?
Yo, he's focused on the important things. Good grooming wins Stanley Cups, you know.
Yeah, in the West, I mean, you've got the Oilers and LA Kings playing tonight. Kings stunned the Oilers, winning in overtime. I still have Oilers with this game, but now LA Kings stole one on the road. Now they're going to, it used to be the Staples Center, but it's called, I don't know, the Dollar General.
Is that the, I believe it's, isn't it like some crypto scam of some sort?
Yeah, something like that. It's
the crypto scam arena.
It's a Nigerian prince. I'm trying to reach you about your car's warranty. Bowl or venue.
I guess better apologize to Crypto Scam Arena.
Oh, yeah. We have the apology list. We've been padding that quite a bit. So, I mean,
hopefully you remember what was all supposed to be on it.
Yeah, not a clue. I think LA Kings just, they stayed their own execution, but it's definitely, it's going to be Oilers. I think Oilers takes game three, and then that's all she wrote for the Kings. Better luck next year.
I agree. I still am not convinced, though, that team is built for a long playoff run.
Tomorrow, 8 o'clock.
The goaltending certainly is not.
Oh, yeah. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock, Bruins, Maple Leafs. See, I'm doing well. I almost had maple laughs, but no, I
but you didn't.
I didn't.
Look at you go.
I'm so proud of myself. You're
showing growth as a human being. I'm impressed.
I really am. Right now, with Bruins...
2-1.
2-1. Still feeling good. Still feel. Actually, I think I have Toronto coming out of this round, don't I?
You do, because you're insane.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess I'd just rather be disappointed slightly by not winning the brackets as opposed to, you know...
Disappointed by them moving on to the second round? That's fair.
Sorry, Skinner, and all the Leafs fans I know.
I'm not sorry to them at all. That's what they get for rooting for the Maple Leafs.
So I don't know. I honestly thought with this, the talent that Toronto has, except for the fact that was it Mitch Marner or Nylander. Nylander, he's week to week. He's not. Something's going on with him. They're thinking concussion. He may not be back, at least not in these playoffs. So, I mean, and Boston has taken full advantage of that.
Yeah, he is still day-to-day. Matt Murray's out. Klingberg hasn't played this season. Jake Muzzin also out for the season.
He's out. How?
Lucic may or may not play for... No, he is out for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, it's not looking good for the Leafs, but, I mean... That's why you're paying Matthews all that money. So,
and he's gotten the results. He's produced. Like it's certainly
he's a
not
player you can count on.
He's got 7 goals with 4 assists over the last 10 games.
Needs to shave that Gomez Adams mustache, but other than that, he's doing a great job.
Other than that, yeah, doing fantastic. But it's not enough. Like, but I told you, I've been saying this about the Leafs for a while. Like that's such a top heavy team.
Yeah,
like they put so much money into like 5 guys at the expense of literal the rest of the roster.
Yeah, and this is why you need to roll 4 lines to win a Stanley Cup. I can't remember the last time a team has won a Stanley Cup without being able to roll 4 lines.
Yeah.
Maybe the 80s Oilers, because, I mean, you had some of the best players in the league right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, stat team all the way around.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll have to find out. We'll talk more about it on Monday, because there's going to be a couple games that happen between now and then. Might have a couple teams going home.
We very well might, by the time Monday rolls around, have at least a series or two that are donezo. I think the Panthers will definitely be done by the time Monday rolls around. Like, that's not
going... They'll be moving on. The Bolts will be done.
Right. Yeah. That series will be done by the time we get on the air next. I honestly think... I mean, it just seems weird to be talking about Tampa Bay going home this early in the proceedings, but here we are.
Yeah, in favor of Florida. I mean, this is it's a bizarro world.
Really, truly is. So, do we want to get into the Wings now? Let's
take a break, and then we'll come back with the Free Press came out with the letter grades for your Detroit Red Wings.
And we'll tell you just how wrong they are. I'm just going in with the assumption that they're wrong because, you know, it's probably true. we'll get to that next, and we'll close things out here. It is happy hour. Stick around. We will be back right after this.
That's it. It's over.
Jack Daniels!
It is is Happy Hour. As we get set to close out the show today, let's do, as promised, Red Wings season grades.
Yes. Everybody likes to do these at the end of a season, and sometimes they're on the money, sometimes they're not. If you have the Detroit Free Press one brought up on your screen, I have been kind of agreeing with a lot of these.
Yeah, luckily for you, I do happen to be a subscriber, so let's do this thing.
Okay.
So we'll start, they start with defenseman Ben Sherratt. What grade would you give Ben Sherratt, Harahawk?
Ben Sherratt, I would have to say a B minus.
The Freak gives him a B. Plays a heavy game, always ready to stick up for a teammate, was a solid, dependable partner for most Sider down the stretch. I probably would have given him B minus, C plus, but I can see, given the Sider pairing, how they come to that conclusion.
I mean, he is a veteran presence. Kind of got into a scrap in practice with Lucas Raymond, but I mean, that's, you know, tempers running high. He was probably Raymond kind of getting frustrated, and Sherratt just kind of like put him in check.
That seems,
if I could venture a guess.
Sure. JT Compher.
I have really liked Compher. I really thought that, you know, he had some clutch goals. He double-digit goals, I believe, almost bordering on 20.
19 goals.
19 goals. I would give him a B.
You have the article brought up over there, don't you?
I looked at,
they
it,
literally
I looked at it before, but
B,
for some reason...
They say clutch goals, and...
No, I swear. I looked at this article, and they had all the grades, and I agree with them. And then it was like... all of a sudden I tried to look at it again, and they're like, nope, you're not a subscriber.
Poor Adam.
Yep.
Andrew Kopp.
Andrew Kopp, kind of a, I don't know, I like Kopp. He did very well for me 1 year when I had him in my fantasy league, but this hasn't really, I'd give him a C.
I hate him because he screwed over my fantasy team.
No,
I
he
love
did
it.
Well that year.
C plus,
okay.
Didn't see much power play time, which impacted his production. The team need to see more of a push to demand a top six role. Alex DeBrincat.
A.
Actually, no.
No?
They gave him a B minus.
A B minus?
I disagree, but yeah. their rationale is they scored just 10 goals the second half of the season, going quiet at a crucial time before erupting with 7 points the final four games. Many a score was streaky, but scoring is DeBrincat's bread and butter, and it's disappointing that he didn't even reach 30 his first time with the Wings.
But he
was scoring, he was basically carrying the team for a while.
Yeah, that's just it. I mean,
I can't give him that low of a grade.
So what'd they give him, a B minus?
B minus.
And I give
him a solid A minus.
All right, yeah, all right.
I mean, I ding him a bit just for, like I said, his stick went a bit quiet, but so did everybody's.
Right.
If we're running short on time, so let's run through some of these a little quicker. Simon Evanson.
Incomplete. He only played a couple games. They have a goal, though.
They gave him a B. For okay. whatever it's worth.
Okay.
Robbie Fabry.
Kind of disappeared. I would give him a C plus.
They gave him a B minus. Shane Gostisbehere.
Really turned it on towards the end of the season. I would give him a B minus.
They gave him an A minus, so
really?
I could be okay with a solid B. Real quick, Christian Fisher.
People love him, but
I don't understand it.
I don't see it, so C plus.
He's a decent defensive forward, and you hit the nail on the head. They, too, gave him a C plus.
All right.
Justin Hull, how did they even grade him? I don't
Incomplete.
Understand.
Incomplete. He played, like, what, 10 games, 15 games?
Like 27 games total. I don't even remember playing him that many games.
No.
I don't know how they graded him. They gave him a C. Patrick Kane. Showtime.
A.
Absolutely an
A. A plus with extra credit.
Without a doubt. Sure. Dylan Larkin was also an A. Yep. Like, I don't think we even needed to guess that one.
Nope.
Alex Lyon.
Oh, wow. That is, because when he was on, he was on. When he was off, he brought everybody
off.
Down. I would give him a C plus.
They gave him a B plus. I mean, he did work his way up from like the third stringer to the number one starter. Went 10 games between wins in March, but that had more to do with the team in front of him. Terrific story in signing David Perron.
I like Perron. I would give him easily a B.
B plus.
B plus? Okay.
I think they
all
were...
Deep. All right, Freep. I'm on you.
All right. Lucas Raymond.
A.
Absolutely, and they certainly seem to agree with you. Jeff Petrie. Can
D
you give an F minus?
D minus.
They gave him a C.
All right. Well, okay. They must have been watching different games than I have.
Yeah. Like, are you guys on crack? I feel like you guys are on crack. Right. No cider.
Oh, not the best season, but still better than most. I'm going to say a straight B.
They gave him an A-, so very close. Daniel Sprong.
I like Daniel Sprong. I thought he was a good blue-collar worker that we like here in Detroit.
Yeah.
I will give him a B as well.
I would give him I'd give him an A-. Like,
really? Okay. All right.
They gave him a B+ for what it's worth. But okay, I mean, the production you got for a guy on a $2 million contract, yep. Like...
You were not expecting what you got from him.
Yeah. Who expected, like, 18 goals, 25 assists? Like, yep. That was a very, very shrewd signing on the part of Steve Yzerman. I was very impressed with what I saw out of him. I'd like to bring him back. We'll see if they actually do.
I hope so.
They absolutely should. Oh, Joe Valeno.
Oh, I was disappointed, and I like Joe Valeno.
You were a big Joe Valeno supporter for a long time.
I would give him a B-.
And they gave him a C+. So, pretty close.
And that makes more sense.
Jake Wallman.
Oh, Jake Wallman, the gritty. Only because he was injured for so long, I'm going to say B+.
They gave him a C-.
What?
How did he get a lower grade than Jeff Petrie?
Oh, my God.
I don't understand that.
Oh, that one hurts, Freeb. Come on.
Disappointing second half.
That one cut me deep.
They're taking a lot out of the second half for a lot of these guys. Well, he's struggling. Everybody struggled in the second half of the season. Like, what are we doing here?
Except for maybe Larkin. But
yeah, like, Larkin was about the only one who didn't. And when he was out of the lineup, we saw how quickly things tank.
Oh, man.
So then we finally have Coach Derek Lalonde and staff. What grade do you think the Free Press gave this man?
I would give him a C+.
They gave him a B-. I would give him a C- myself.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're holding the second half against everybody, how can we not hold it against Lalonde?
It should start with Lalonde.
It absolutely should start with Lalonde. Like, if we're going to blame all the players who had a down second half, how are we not blaming the coach for that team tanking for a month?
Exactly.
That's ridiculous. Freep, you tried, you did your best, but you still failed.
Actually, we're pretty close with what they wanted.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, but there was a couple.
There was a couple ones that are blatantly bad,
I don't know what games you were watching.
Right.
Freep.
On that note, we do have to do a little bit of, we have some business to take care of.
Sure.
In our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls, Happy Hour would like to apologize to you, Kirk Cousins, Joe Alt, Crypto Scam Arena. We've been trying to reach you about your car's extended warranty arena. The Toronto Maple Laughs, Lou Lamorello, we're sorry. We're also sorry if you happen to be showing up tonight at Stone's Throw Theater, where Adam is making his theater debut.
Yeah, I don't even know how that panned out, but it just fell literally into my lap.
He's not going to be there personally doing it, but you'll be hearing the voice of Adam Harahuck at tonight's production of Popcorn Falls at Stone's Throw Theater, located inside Byers Furniture here in lovely downtown Lapeer, for all your convenient furniture and theater needs. On that note, stick around. Sessions is up next with special guests. Get out of my shop or whatever?
All over the shop. And I rarely ever ask bands about their name because it's a tired cliche question, but all over the shop, I have to figure out the story behind this name.
It's the only question he actually has tonight. So tune in for that here at in about 4 minutes on Solid State Radio. I'll be well. Talk to you Monday at 3. See ya.